This podcast is intended to support UK healthcare professionals with education. The information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment, and patients are encouraged to consult healthcare providers, including nurses, for any medical questions or concerns.
Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional, where healthcare professionals and experts by experience discuss the latest hot topics in the worlds of stoma, continence care and specialist practice. I'm Hannah Patterson. I've worked in specialist care and I'm currently the Ostomy Care Associate Education Manager at Coloplast. Today we are talking Urology Awareness Month with the Urostomy Association.
Other people's lived experiences, that's been the most helpful, seeing that there is life after a urostomy.
Talk about living normal life without a bladder. These are passionate advocates for that.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Today's a really special podcast because September is actually Urology Awareness Month. I remember last year we did a really great podcast with some members and we spoke about urology awareness and specifically around urology infections and the importance of bladder emptying and things like that. Now, I want to do something a little bit different this year. So I'm now, as I said in the title, I'm joined by the Urostomy Association. So I've got three very special guests with me and I cannot wait to introduce them. So I'm going to start off by bringing in Derek. So hi, Derek. If you'd like to tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Oh, hi, Hannah. I'm Derek Rosario. I'm a consultant urological surgeon based in Sheffield, with an academic portfolio as well. My main interests are in the management of urological oncology, so usually bladder or prostate cancer. I suppose for the relevance today, it's bladder cancer. I'm also very interested in, we do studies looking at quality of life in people diagnosed with cancer and treated for cancer. So thank you very much for inviting me along.
No, thank you so much for joining us. And as I said, you're actually currently the president of the Urostomy Association as well, aren't you?
Yes, yes. I'm very fortunate to be involved in the Urostomy Association. One of my past patients invited me in to a talk and something like 12 years later, I became president and I've been there since. It's a wonderful, I think one of the best peer support organizations that I've come across, that really, the amount of stuff I've learned about the lived experience with urostomy that's helped me in my career, I cannot overstate. It's a fabulous bunch of people. And talk about living normal life without a bladder. These are absolute, I would say, advocates, passionate advocates for that. And it's really quite uplifting. So I do enjoy my interactions with the Urostomy Association.
Now, it's almost like a seamless transition you've done for me there, Derek, talking about ambassadors and advocates for this, because would you believe it? We're also joined by two advocates as well. So I'm going to go ladies first and bring in Catherine. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Hannah. I'm a safeguarding lead in a special school in Sheffield, and I was diagnosed with muscle-invasive bladder cancer earlier this year, coincided with the week of my 50th birthday, which was quite unfortunate timing. So celebrations and holidays were all put on hold, but only put on hold, not cancelled, just put on hold. And yeah, I had my surgery to remove my bladder and a radical hysterectomy 8 weeks ago. So I'm 8 weeks post-surgery and really, really happy to be here today.
Fantastic. And I've got to say, the listeners won't be able to see, but Catherine does no way near look like she has been through surgery 8 weeks ago. She looks absolutely amazing. So well done. You look, and you sound so positive as well.
Yeah, I am. I'm feeling really, really positive and I'm feeling really, really well. So yeah, it's great.
And how did you hear about the Urostomy Association?
So I heard about the association from Derek Rosario, who is my surgeon. So yeah, and then after that, actually through the stoma nurses as well.
Fantastic. And then last but by no means least, Nigel. Hi, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Nigel Tricker. I'm a retired accountant. I live some 25 miles north of London. Developed bladder cancer in 2020 and had a cystectomy and prostatectomy and removal of lymph nodes in January 21 at Guy's Cancer Centre. I am pretty sure that I was introduced to the Urostomy Association by the urology nurses who worked in Guy's, who were terrific, not only while I was there, but in the weeks afterwards, phoning every morning to see how I was, take measurements and so on. And I think that the identity of the Urostomy Association and the purpose of its work was among many pieces of support materials that were given to me on leaving. I've used it. I began to use the Urostomy Association website very quickly. I quickly found, I think the website is of very high quality. I think the publication, which comes through my letterbox, is it three times a year? I think it's three times a year, is also of very high quality. And I found it very, very helpful. I still do. I found it helpful in the early days of living with a urostomy, just for sort of simple things, you know, where to buy different clothes, which I needed for a while, less so now. What to do if you're traveling, which actually is one of the more demanding issues that you have to face when you have a stoma. Issues of this kind, and just reading about other people's experiences and how they had coped, I've always found very helpful. So I think it's a splendid association. I'm very happy to be here today and to do anything I can to help it.
Fantastic. And it's great to hear that still, you know, 3.5 years down the line, Nigel, you're still finding it so helpful and so supportive.
Yes.
How have you found it, Catherine, in the early days, those interactions with the Urostomy Association? I bet for you being so early, it's been quite, you know, a different way of thinking at the moment.
Yeah, so I've only just kind of connected with the association. And prior to that, I was using the Fight Bladder Cancer UK website. And I use both now alongside each other and feel like I get a lot of information from both. Part of, I think, my positive outlook and the way that I processed being diagnosed was to do lots and lots and lots of research. I needed to do that research. That's just the kind of person I am. And I needed to steer away from Dr. Google, I was informed very, very early on. Using the Fight Bladder Cancer UK website and using the Urostomy Association website, I was able to get the real information and the quality information that I needed, and that helped me to process what I was going through, what I was about to go through. And yeah, it's, and then as Derek, as Nigel's just said as well, other people's lived experiences, that's been the most helpful, seeing that there is life after your urostomy and you can still go traveling and you can wear a bikini and you can just carry on with life. That has been the most valuable, I think.
Hannah, I wonder if I can just follow Catherine's lead in there, because I think she's understated what she's been through, as I'm sure Nigel will, having been through a cystectomy, understand, and completely echo. She looks absolutely fabulous, and I'm delighted to see that. But this thing about Fight Bladder Cancer and Urostomy Association, of course, Nigel will remember this from nearly 4 years ago, and Catherine, it'll be fresh in her mind. What's uppermost usually when a urostomy is done for cancer is the diagnosis of cancer. And of course, a lot of the research I think Catherine's talking about is, you know, what do I do with this? The urostomy is one of the ways of returning people to normal life. There are other ways, and I'm sure Catherine remembers some of these long, difficult conversations we had that we might get a chance to go into, but probably isn't quite relevant for today. But just to bear in mind that people need information at their own pace. And it'd be interesting to know Nigel's and Catherine's sort of reflection on their journey through it, you know, overwhelmed by too much information, then needing more, going back and finding out when's the right time to talk to people about the options about their cancer, the reality of the cancer, the prognosis, the options for treatment and how they're going to affect you in the long term. These are things that we go through all the time, but Catherine, you look great.
Thank you.
Nigel, how did you find those early information stages?
I found them very, very useful. Catherine was obviously in a position to do some research before the operation. I don't think that really happened to me. I diagnosed in mid-December, into hospital a week later for a cystoscopy just to see what nature of cancer it was. And then after that, the urologist at Guy's Cancer Center set out for me the alternatives, which I think were basically either the cystectomy or possibly going the route of immunotherapy, as I recall it. I thought that he set out the options very fully and very clearly. And I remember by the end of that conversation feeling, well, there's really only one way to go, but I won't say yes right now. I wanted to go back to the doctor who had referred me and I think had first suspected that I had bladder cancer and get her opinion. And her opinion very much endorsed the view that surgery was the better way forward. So I think Catherine and I are a little different in that I don't think I had so much information beforehand. Maybe time was of the essence, I don't know. But anyway, it didn't work like that. I just waited a few weeks until I went into hospital for the surgery. Does one really understand exactly what is going to happen? I think I had persuaded myself that the radical surgery was the right course and probably the only course. It probably took a little while beyond the surgery before you realized the full impact of it. I remember lifting the blankets and looking down at my abdomen and seeing all the tubes coming out of both sides and think, oh yeah, things have changed for the time being. But from there, it went well. And I think one learns to live with these adjustments.
Yeah. And it sounds like all your options were spoken through quite clearly with you, which is really good.
Yes.
And I'd be interested to speak to you again from your point of view, Catherine. I know you said you went down the research route, but you said you were very mindful to avoid the Dr. Google, which, yes, we all speak about Dr. Google. I mean, the internet's a wonderful place, but, and I think Derek will probably back me up here, in the wrong hands, it's almost an absolute minefield out there. And to actually, and this is again why places like the Urostomy Association are so useful, because it's almost a safe house, really. It's a safe port of call for people to go to rather than going down the Google route. So where did you start to find your research from? Where did you look?
So my initial response to being told that I was most likely going to need surgery to remove my bladder was absolute utter devastation. And the first time that I met Derek, I was borderline hysterical, if I'm honest, because I was just so anti the surgery route. I'd already done some research around bladder cancer, not knowing that my bladder cancer was muscle invasive at this point. And some of the treatments for less invasive bladder cancers are, you know, much more straightforward. So I'd kind of hoped and convinced myself that I was going to have, you know, a very straightforward journey, because I wasn't particularly poorly. I wasn't a very ill person. I was I had some symptoms, but not significant severe symptoms. So, you know, I was still going to work. I was well. I was like, no. I was in a bit of denial, if I'm honest. This can't be happening to me. I'll just go into hospital. They'll just scrape it away. I'll have a bit of chemotherapy perhaps, and then that'll be me on my way. So it was a massive shock to find out that I was probably going to need my bladder removing. And part of my job, I am a trained trauma-informed practitioner, and I recognised a lot of the emotions that I was going through were trauma responses, and I knew that I needed to kind of get myself in a position where I calmed down a bit for a start and started to think a bit more rationally, because I was completely irrational. I was, I'm not having a bag, no way. I'll chance it coming back again, you know. I'll just give me radiotherapy and then I'll chance it. I'll gamble of it coming back. And a real denial, because I felt so well. I was okay. I was, you know, well. It was bizarre, really. Anyway, once I realised quite how significant the bladder cancer was, and I, you know, loads and loads of amazing information from Derek and from the nurses in urology. I also went to my GP and I got some anti-anxiety medication, which really helped me to kind of process the information and just to kind of take that time to process and start to do my research. And once I started to do my research and once I started to speak to other people and speak to family and friends and particularly my children, and they were all like, well, that's not a big deal. It's not a big deal having a urostomy bag. And then using the Urostomy Association and the Fight Bladder Cancer UK website to look at real life stories. And one of the biggest things for me was I want to still go on holiday. I had two holidays planned last year. I was supposed to go to Florida and to Mallorca, sorry, this year. I'll say last year as though it's happened ages ago. And I just wanted to be able to do those things. You know, holidays are important to us. I'm only 50 years old. I thought this only happened to 80 and 90 year old people. They wear bags, you know, not me. I still want to wear a bikini. So getting those real life lived experiences from other people and talking to my own children. I've got a son who's 22 and a daughter who's 17, and their response, which was kind of, this is no big deal, Mum. What are you on about? My daughter's like, I follow loads of people on TikTok with stomas. What are you on about? You know, and bless them, they introduced me to the world of kind of TikTok and Instagram, where there are a lot of very young girls with stomas, mainly in their 20s, and they're really rocking those stomas. They're mainly colostomy girls. No, I've still not found anybody my age with a urostomy. I've still not found anybody with a urostomy, if I'm honest, on social media. It's the Instagram field seems to be all around young girls in their 20s with colostomies. So yeah, so once I started to kind of see that this is okay, this is accepted, my kids are like, yeah, it's no big deal. I'm looking at other people's lived experiences using the websites. Then there was quite a few kind of uncertainties around my cancer and whether or not it may have spread to other parts of my body. And at that point, after quite a lot of anxiety, waiting for scan results to come back to see whether or not actually it was somewhere else as well as in the bladder, I went full circle and I was like, get it out. I love it. I just want it out, you know. And I'd completely gone full circle. So by the time I saw Derek again, I was like, yep. Yeah, just take it, take the lot.
Do it now.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm more than happy. In fact, you know, I'm starting to kind of like feel really positive about rocking this bag, you know. And yeah, so I've gone through a journey, let's say.
But it's interesting what you say about social media there, that, and this is why I always almost say urostomy's become the forgotten stoma. And obviously they're not forgotten, they're out there. But when it comes to social media, it is a lot around ileostomy, colostomy. Mm. And this is where I actually want to point our nurses to a webinar that's on coloplastprofessional.co.uk. And it's actually called Urostomies, the Forgotten Stoma. Mm. And it features two of our coloplast ambassadors, the lovely Sammy, who has a urostomy. Sammy's in her 20s, absolute rock star, Sammy is. And Anna, who's, I believe she's also in her 20s. And Anna actually has an urostomy and an ileostomy. And it's a really great webinar. I recommend anybody to have a listen to that, because it really does discuss that empowerment again. And the fact that, you know, I think it's absolutely brilliant that the likes of yourselves, Nigel and Catherine, and then Sammy and Anna as well. We've got another ambassador, Rachel, who, you made me smile, Catherine, when you said rocking, because her Instagram name is actually Rocking Two Stomas. She's got a urostomy and an ileostomy as well. So I love that rocking thing. You're going to rock those stomas. And to have people talking more about urostomies is so, so good. And to hear the support offered from the Urostomy Association really is fantastic. And Derek, I can only imagine you must feel so proud of hearing the work that Urostomy Association can do for patients. It must be you feel really proud to be part of it as well.
Oh, for sure, Hannah. It's wonderful to hear that. I was quite taken aback by the social media and that urostomies, if you like, are the forgotten stoma. But then we have to remember that there aren't that many urostomates, if I may use that word, out there. There are a lot more, you know, in terms of a community, colostomy and ileostomy, a much bigger community. And I don't know if I can just be slightly negative about the NHS. There's this sort of thing to group things together to cut costs, and therefore a stoma is a stoma is a stoma. And it'd be interesting to hear Anna's and Rachel's views, which I know, I think I know, that, you know, what are the differences between urostomy and colostomy? And they are different. I mean, of course, a stoma bag is a stoma bag, but the nuances of living a normal life with a urostomy or with a colostomy will be different, or with both. So, yes, I do like the fact that we're positioned well. I don't think the UA has always done itself a lot of favors. We've recruited Samantha recently to come in just for this sort of purpose. We weren't very good at putting ourselves forward. We didn't adopt the 21st century. And now, looking at people like Nigel and Catherine and Samantha, I feel really cheered that, you know, we've got younger, more rocking people out there who are just making, putting Urostomy Association forward, living life as normal without a bladder.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk to people with ileostomies that living life without a bowel. I think that living life without a bladder is just, I mean, I always say with mine, I'm no colon, still rolling. So we need to make up a little bit of a bladder one now. I can't think of one off the top of my head. I will think of one though, because I always call it the poo taboo when it comes to stomas and things like that. So we need to make a little bit of a one now regarding urology and urostomies, I think. Leave that one with me. I will think of a little punchline for us.
Maybe put a competition out there for people to write in, you know, get it out there on Instagram. Or
the prize can be come and record a podcast with Hannah. That might not be a prize though. But no, it is really, really great. And I know Derek alluded to it at the very start, to be able to speak to advocates and people that are living those true real life experiences, it's absolutely essential. And this is, I know that Derek said it again, it's how he's done a lot of his learning, and it's still how I'm doing my learning now. I mean, I've been a patient, I've had a stoma, but I still learn so much from speaking to other people with stomas, other people that have lived the surgical life. It's so important. It's not a one-size-fits-all. You can speak to somebody that, as I said, regarding the research, Catherine, you needed that research element. You needed, that was your way of feeling back in control of things. Someone else might go, actually, do you know what? You do what you think is best. I don't want to know. You just do what you need to do. And I saw both sides when I worked in NHS, that you do get that. And I think it's really important for nurses, healthcare professionals to remember that you can't expect everyone to be the same. And regardless of what we say, people are going to go off to the internet, be it good or bad. And I will put the link for the Urostomy Association in the podcast description here. So nurses, again, may not be quite so familiar. We all hear about the Ileostomy Association. We all hear about Colostomy UK. But the Urostomy Association, it's so tailored to you guys. And there are such special complexities when it comes to having a urostomy. And there's the skin issues that you don't get when it comes to bowel stomas, that you do get with bladder stomas. And it's a completely different way of treating things. And I think it's so important to have you guys out there. And I cannot do any more than just thank you all so much for being part of it. I really, really can't. And I feel that there's definitely another podcast in here. And I think we need to have, because before we came on the podcast, Catherine was telling me, and Derek put his fingers in the ears at the time, that she was going to go out for a bottomless brunch soon. So I think we need to hear about Catherine's lived experiences of bottomless brunches with a urostomy on the next episode.
Definitely.
It might actually be better, Catherine. I mean, you don't have to go for a wee, do you? So
Exactly.
Less time spent going to and from the loo. Yeah. Right? That's a great.
Yeah.
Exactly. Put on a leg bag, Catherine. You've got even longer.
Brilliant. Yes, absolutely. And my holidays, I need to come back and talk to you about my holidays, because I am going to go on holiday. I am going to make up for that lost time. I am going to wear a bikini. I'm going to rock that bag as a 50-year-old lady. there's a definite gap in the kind of social media area for people my age. Lots and lots of 20-year-old girls out there who are doing an amazing, sterling job of normalising wearing a bag and having a stoma, but not very many. Well, I haven't found anybody actually my age yet. So,
would you like to share your social media with us now, Catherine, and we can include that as well?
Well, I'm not quite there yet, but 8 weeks post-surgery, I'm definitely thinking of launching a specific Instagram page to tell my story. I've got all my daughter and niece and all their friends thinking up an appropriate name for an Instagram page. But yes, I'm definitely going to be doing something.
But thank you ever so much. And thank you, Nigel, as well. And Derek, it's been great to have you in here from the surgeon's perspective. But I really hope you will all join me again at some point.
Definitely.
Thank you.
I'd like to say thank you to Nigel because, I mean, I think he's understated what things were like at the height of COVID. And he came straight through after that, you know. Recovery and rehabilitation at that point, where you had no social interaction, all sorts of weird things going on. You know, you've done a wonderful, wonderful
absolutely.
Job, Nigel, you know.
Absolutely.
Well, it can't have been easy, but well done. You look great.
Absolutely. We've definitely got two rocking urostomates here.
Oh, I feel very cheered at being described as a rocking urostomate. Does an old man a great deal of good.
You can get it on a T-shirt, Nigel.
Yeah.
thanks again. And for everyone listening, we'll see you on the next podcast. Thank you for listening. To see more of the wide variety of education we offer, please visit collarplusprofessional.co.uk. See you next time.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is a Vibrant Sound Media production for Collarplast Professional.